What if I told you that the secret to unlocking the most advanced, hyper-efficient artificial intelligence in the world is, well, to force it to take a nap?
I mean, it sounds completely counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
Especially in an industry that has just, spent a decade worshiping at the altar of raw speed.
Right. I mean, for the last 10 or 15 years, the absolute governing law of the technology world was just move fast and break
Oh,
things.
absolutely.
You didn't worry about the mess, you just worried about getting there first. But looking at the landscape today, it really feels like someone just slammed on the emergency brake. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one.
Our mission, as always, is to extract the signal from the noise for you. And today, our source material is a stack of updates from Tech and AI Daily for Wednesday, May 27, 2026. And I mean, every single headline points to this massive, undeniable shift. We are officially entering the slowdown era of tech.
This is a fascinating pivot, really, because across the board, we are seeing this this demand for intentionality, for hard boundaries, and honestly, for consolidation.
Yeah, and it's not just one sector either. We're talking about how developers write software, how AI processes information, how global governments are regulating the internet, and even how gig workers are organizing.
Right, it's a complete structural reset.
Exactly. So I want to start at the absolute ground level today, the individual software developer sitting at a keyboard. Because that whole narrative that AI coding assistants are going to make humans write code at a million miles an hour, that is completely falling apart.
Yeah, the reality of working with generative tools in the trenches is, well, it's finally catching up to those shiny marketing brochures.
There's this essay blowing up on Hacker News right now. It hit a score of 1095, which, for anyone who doesn't live on that forum, a score that high is basically a massive blinking neon sign that an idea has hit a profound nerve with
Oh, yeah,
engineers.
you don't get that high without saying something people are desperately feeling.
Right. And the author's main argument is that AI coding tools are actually most valuable when you use them to write code more slowly, not 10x faster, like actually slower.
Which kind of shatters the whole Silicon Valley mythology, doesn't it?
Completely shatters it. The argument is that you need that extra time to actually comprehend what the AI just spit out. I read this and I immediately pictured this very specific scenario, right? Imagine you manage a brilliant but totally over-caffeinated intern.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. Like, they can write 10 pages of reports in 5 minutes, but if you don't slow down to review every single line of their work and give them highly structured, really boring instructions, they will just create a massive, tangled mess much faster than you ever could have.
Exactly.
So, if developers are purposely slowing down now, what does that do to the whole 10x developer myth? Are we finally admitting that understanding code is way harder than just typing it?
I think we have to admit that, yeah, the 10x developer myth, at least as it pertains to raw typing speed, is officially dead. And the mechanics of why this is happening are really important to unpack for you here.
Okay, let's unpack it.
So when you use an AI to generate a block of code, that AI is synthesizing vast, vast amounts of statistical patterns. But it doesn't possess any like intrinsic understanding of your company's specific business logic.
Right, or the long-term maintenance burden of what it just wrote.
Exactly. It doesn't know that the billing system connects to some legacy database from 2015.
It has no idea.
None at all. So if a developer doesn't slow down to comprehend how that generated code fits into the larger architecture, they are effectively introducing technical debt at unprecedented speeds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are basically borrowing time today that you will have to pay back with massive interest tomorrow when the whole system breaks. It's a compounding interest problem.
Which means you're going to spend weeks fixing bugs you didn't even know you wrote.
Exactly.
And that ties into another really fascinating dynamic from those Hacker News discussions. Developers are finding that large language models perform significantly better when you prompt them using boring, widely used programming languages. You know, think Java or Python rather than the shiny, cutting-edge niche languages.
Oh, yeah. This makes total sense when you look under the hood.
So why is boring suddenly the secret weapon for advanced AI?
Well, it comes entirely down to the volume of training data. AI doesn't possess human logic, right? It relies entirely on pattern recognition derived from what it has already read. And a boring language like Java has been around for decades. There are millions of open source repositories, billions of lines of code, and endless forum discussions about every conceivable edge case.
So the AI has essentially read the Java dictionary a billion times over.
Precisely. That massive volume of predictable data provides incredible scaffolding for the AI agents. The predictable idioms are deeply ingrained in its weights.
But the newer languages don't have that.
Right. When you ask an AI to write in a niche, cutting-edge language, the training data is sparse. The statistical patterns are just really weak. So the AI starts hallucinating, or it writes highly inefficient workarounds. When you're delegating core infrastructure to an algorithm, boring means reliable. And reliability is everything.
That makes total sense. And speaking of maintaining a reliable, clean environment, there was a very sharp call to action in the daily update about basic coding hygiene.
Oh, the commit messages.
Yes. Developers are urging each other to stop letting their AI coding assistants auto-inject marketing signatures into their commit messages. Now, just to be clear, a commit message is just the little note a developer leaves when they save a change to the code base. It seems like such a petty thing to get upset about, but the reaction was incredibly visceral.
It's visceral because it's a symptom of a much larger disease, which is losing control of your own professional environment.
How so?
Well, a commit message isn't just a save file. It is the historical, chronological record of why a human being made a specific change to a critical system. It's a vital documentation for the developers who come after you.
Right. And when you let an AI automatically stamp, you know, generated by AI Assistant Pro onto that record, what are you actually giving up?
You are passively ceding ownership of your professional output to a third-party vendor. It's a total loss of boundaries. The pushback we are seeing here is developers saying, wait, this is my work, my environment, my historical record. Slowing down means taking the time to write your own reasoning and protecting the integrity of your system from marketing spam.
It's fascinating that this desire to regain control and slow things down isn't just happening at the individual keyboard level either. It turns out the AI models themselves might actually need to hit the brakes.
This is genuinely one of the most unexpected architectural developments in the field right now.
It really is. There is a new paper published on ARC5 proposing that large language models suffer from what researchers are calling knowledge fragmentation. And their proposed fix, an offline consolidation period.
Literally an analog to human sleep.
They are literally suggesting sleep for artificial intelligence.
The biological parallel here is just incredible. I mean, in human neuroscience, we know that sleep is not just your brain turning off. It is a highly active state of offline consolidation.
Right. You're processing the day.
Exactly. Throughout your day, you absorb this barrage of fragmented information, sounds, interactions. During sleep, your brain runs maintenance. It prunes unnecessary connections and integrates the new facts into your broader neural network, really connecting the dots.
So how does a massive server farm suffer from a lack of sleep?
Well, the ARCSIP paper suggests that as LLMs continuously ingest new real-time data, their mathematical weights become disjointed. They suffer from that knowledge fragmentation, which in machine learning can lead to something called catastrophic forgetting.
Catastrophic forgetting.
Yeah. The model learns a new fact, but fails to integrate it with what it already knows. Or worse, the new data overwrites an existing critical capability.
So it learns who won the Super Bowl today, but in the process, it basically forgets how to do basic algebra.
Exactly. So the researchers are proposing an offline period, a time when the model isn't answering queries from users, but is instead running internal consolidation algorithms, essentially sleeping on the data. It restores structural integrity to the network. It's a profound realization that even a digital brain has a speed limit for comprehension.
That is just wild to me. We thought we could just scale up the machines forever, but even algorithms need a nap to sort their thoughts. But, you know, while the massive models are busy sleeping, the economics of how businesses actually use AI is completely waking up.
Oh, the Signal Bloom report.
Yeah, there's a new report from Signal Bloom detailing a massive shift in the market. Businesses are running local, open-weight AI models and combining them with cheap, overseas human talent. And this hybrid setup is actually undercutting the massive AI labs on costs.
That's a huge shift.
Now, before we dive into the economics of that, let's establish some definitions for you. For someone not in the weeds of AI infrastructure, what is a frontier AI lab and what is an open-weight model?
Good distinction to make. So, a frontier AI lab refers to the massive centralized giants, think OpenAI or Anthropic. They build the trillion parameter god models that cost billions to train, and you charge you a toll, an API cost, every single time you send them a prompt. An open weight model, on the other hand, is a smaller, highly capable AI that is freely available to download. You can run it on your own local hardware. You don't pay a toll per query.
Okay, wait. So I have to push back on the economic narrative here.
Sure.
Because for years, the story we've been told is that massive, centralized AI is going to automate away human labor. Like, the narrative was that the big tech companies would own the inference stack, meaning they'd own all the computing power required to do anything, and human workers would just be obsolete.
Right, that was the fear.
But if local models paired with outsourced human talent are actually beating the frontier APIs on cost, doesn't that completely flip the script on the future workforce? Like, how does that math actually work?
It absolutely flips the script.
Yeah.
And the math works because of efficiency and context. What the Signal Bloom report is highlighting is that for, like, 95% of real-world business tasks, sorting customer data, drafting standard emails, categorizing inventory, you don't need a trillion-parameter supercomputer.
Right.
That is massive overkill. And paying the API toll for it is just too expensive.
It's like you don't need a Ferrari to go to the grocery store.
Exactly. You need a smaller, highly efficient, open-weight model running locally. But those smaller models, they sometimes get confused or lack deep context.
Sure.
So what do businesses do? They pair that cheap local model with an outsourced human worker. The human provides the critical thinking, the context, and the oversight, while the local AI provides the raw processing speed.
Oh, I see.
Because you aren't paying the exorbitant API costs of the massive labs, this hybrid human AI setup is incredibly cost effective. Power is decentralizing away from the tech giants and moving to the edges of the network.
So we're moving away from this era where three or four massive tech monopolies control an open global playground and into an era of local control, boundaries, and frankly, walls.
Yeah. Boundaries are becoming the new standard.
And when you scale that anxiety up to the level of a nation state, you get exactly what just happened in the Netherlands.
It's a perfect macro reflection of the micro trend we're talking about. Governments are waking up from the era of frictionless global tech and drawing very hard lines.
Yeah, so the Dutch government just invoked national security powers to block an American acquisition of a vital digital infrastructure supplier. And let's be clear, the U.S. and the Netherlands are close allies.
Very close.
But Europe is aggressively pursuing what they call tech sovereignty. Why is a digital supplier suddenly being treated like a nuclear secret?
Well, because the definition of physical reality has changed. 10 years ago, a digital infrastructure supplier was just viewed as a software or hardware business.
Right, just a company.
Today, the Dutch government is signaling that vital digital infrastructure, the fiber optics, the data centers, the routing protocols, is viewed on the exact same level as physical defense, or the power grid, or the water supply.
Wow. And you wouldn't let a foreign entity buy your city's water supply.
Precisely. And Europe is deciding they won't let foreign entities, even allied ones, buy the backbone of their digital economy. Tech sovereignty means a nation must maintain independent, unquestioned control over the systems that keep its society functioning.
That's huge.
It's a massive shift from globalization back to localization. The era of the borderless internet is closing.
And we are seeing those borders enforced in other ways, too. Disruptive tech platforms are crashing into legacy legal frameworks left and right. For example, Spain just officially blocked the prediction market platforms Polymarket and Kelshi.
Yeah, this is a prime example of code colliding with the law.
Exactly. And let's be totally impartial here. We aren't taking a stance on whether prediction markets are morally good or bad. We're just looking at the facts.
Hmm.
But what is the actual mechanism here? Like, why did Spain block them? And what does a prediction market actually do that makes regulators so nervous?
Well, at its core, a prediction market allows users to buy and sell shares based on the outcome of a future event.
Hmm.
Will a certain candidate win an election? Will the temperature in Madrid hit 40 degrees next Tuesday?
Right.
To the tech industry, this is an incredible information discovery tool. It crowdsources probability based on financial incentives.
But to a regulator?
To a regulator, taking money and wagering it on the outcome of a future. Uncertain event is the literal dictionary definition of gambling.
Ah.
These platforms operated for years in a gray area, moving fast, scaling globally, and basically ignoring borders. But sovereign nations have strict, deeply established laws regarding betting licenses, consumer protection, and capital markets.
Yeah, you can ignore that forever.
No. Spain's action highlights the regulatory wall these platforms continuously hit. You can't just write a clever piece of code to bypass a country's legal sovereignty anymore. The borders are very real.
So we have developers throwing up boundaries around their code. We have AI models needing boundaries around their learning processes so they can sleep. We have nations setting boundaries to protect their sovereignty. And that brings us to the final piece of this puzzle, the everyday humans.
Right. The users and workers.
Exactly. Users, workers, and leaders are all pushing back against the tech machine and demanding a reset. Let's start with the gig economy. In a massive milestone, Uber and Lyft drivers in Massachusetts have formed the first U.S. rideshare union.
This is just a textbook example of physical reality crashing into abstract tech models.
Unpack that for us, because for a decade, the platforms have argued they aren't employers at all, right?
Correct. The platforms have spent millions in legal battles over worker classification, arguing that they are just software companies providing a neutral marketplace. The algorithm simply connects an independent contractor with a rider.
But the drivers disagree.
Strongly. The drivers in Massachusetts forming a union represents the physical reality of the work asserting itself. The human worker driving the actual physical car is demanding that the reality of their labor is recognized.
Meaning negotiations over wages, benefits, working conditions.
Right. Regardless of how the app's abstract algorithm categorizes them, it sets a massive precedent that the rest of the country is going to watch very closely.
It's everyday people demanding leverage. And we're seeing demands for a reset at the very top of the corporate ladder, too. Drew Houston is stepping down as the CEO of Dropbox after 18 years, handing the reins to Ashraf Al-Karmi. How did we go from Dropbox being the absolute darling of Silicon Valley to a company needing a total leadership reset?
Well, because the nature of the product changed from magic to a commodity. When Dropbox launched, seamlessly syncing files across the internet felt like a superpower. It was in a hyper-growth phase.
It really was magic back then.
But today, cloud storage is like running water. You expect it to be there, it's built into every device by default, and you don't really care who pipes it in.
That's true.
It takes immense self-awareness for a founder to step away and admit that the hyper-growth novelty phase is permanently over. The company needs a leader suited for a new era of consolidation and sustained, unglamorous value.
Speaking of self-awareness, there was this punchy little essay going around Hacker News titled, "The User is Visibly Frustrated." It's a plea to developers to understand that UX metrics, user experience data points, are not the same thing as UX empathy.
Oh, I loved this piece.
Think about the last time you're trying to buy something online and the checkout button froze. You're sitting there, frantic, clicking the button 10 times, literally gritting your teeth in frustration.
And what does the developer see on their dashboard?
That's the wild part. To the developer looking at the metrics, your frustrated clicking just registered as high engagement. The dashboard says everything is fantastic.
That is such a crucial disconnect. Metrics abstract the human being into a flat data point.
Mm.
When a software system is designed purely to optimize a metric like time on page or click rate, it loses all touch with the actual human experience.
Yeah, the human element is gone.
That essay resonated because developers are recognizing that the abstract dashboards have blinded them to the reality of what they're building. True UX empathy requires stepping away from the spreadsheet, ignoring the engagement metric, and actually observing the friction and anxiety you are causing in someone's day.
You have to actually see the human being on the other side of the glass, which perfectly sets up our final piece of news today. It's a quick mention of a practical tool, but it feels so symbolic of this entire slowdown movement.
Ah, DynIP.
Yes, the tool of the day is called DynIP. It's a self-hosted dynamic DNS solution. The update highlights that it supports RFC 2136, IPv6, DNS SEC, and bring your own domain. Okay, stop.
That's a lot of acronyms.
For those of us who don't spend our weekends configuring home servers in our basements, what do any of those acronyms actually mean, and why does this tool give me personal tech sovereignty?
I love this example because it brings the macro geopolitics right down to your living room. Let's break it down.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you rely on a massive tech conglomerate, Google, Amazon, Apple, to host your data and route your internet traffic.
Right. They handle all the plumbing.
DynIP is software that lets you run your own address book for your home network. Bring your own domain means you literally own your digital address, not a tech giant.
Okay, what about the security acronyms like DNSSEC?
DNSSEC is essentially a cryptographic wax seal. It guarantees that when someone tries to connect to your home server, they are being secretly redirected by a malicious third party. And IPv6 is just the modern addressing system that ensures there are enough unique IP addresses for every device on Earth.
So why does an average person care about this?
Because learning these tools is the digital equivalent of building your own seawall. It takes time. It's intentional. You have to slow down and learn what an RFC standard actually does.
Yeah, it's not a one-click install.
No, it's not. But when you do it, you aren't reliant on a massive tech conglomerate to host your files, your home security cameras, or your digital identity. It is the ultimate expression of personal boundaries.
So what does this all mean for us? If we look at the whole picture we've painted today, we've traveled from developers purposely coding slower to prevent technical debt, to massive artificial intelligence models requiring a digital nap just to maintain their sanity.
Right.
We've seen European nations drawing hard borders to protect their tech sovereignty from allies, and gig economy drivers in Massachusetts unionizing to protect their physical livelihoods. It all points in the exact same direction. The move fast and break things era is officially in the rearview mirror.
It really is.
We are looking at a maturing, boundaries-focused world that values intentionality over pure, reckless speed.
It is a profound maturation. And it leaves me with one final lingering thought for everyone listening to mull over.
Oh, let's hear it.
If AI models need the equivalent of sleep to consolidate knowledge and avoid fragmentation, and human developers are finding far more value in slowing down rather than speeding up, perhaps we are discovering a universal law.
A universal law.
Yeah. Maybe the ultimate bottleneck in technology isn't computing power or API costs or bandwidth. Maybe the fundamental limit is simply the speed at which any system, whether it's a biological brain, a massive neural network, or an entire society, can genuinely comprehend and integrate new information.
Wow. We thought we could scale up forever, but we're realizing that even the algorithms have a speed limit for true understanding. That is a brilliant thought to leave off on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back next time to keep exploring the signal in the noise. Until then, maybe take a cue from the AI slowdown and get some rest.